Libby, thanks for taking the time today. This is kind of a complex timeline, so let's walk through it.
Sure.
You have this blog, One Hot Mess, for several years. At one point, you start writing about former President Trump, and another attorney in the state complains. The state investigates you and your blog and finds no wrongdoing.
Correct.
Then Governor Dunleavy gets elected, and he and his former chief of staff, Tuckerman Babcock, send out these demands for resignations to 800-something employees in the state, including you, something that was recently deemed unconstitutional.
Right.
You resign. Governor Dunleavy gets sworn in at noon on December 3rd, and you find out 20 minutes later that you've been fired.
Right.
That's more than 3 years fighting for this. What was that process like?
You know, it was really slow and grueling, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't like every single day something different was happening in the case or anything. It's just, it's a long time to be in limbo with something like this. It takes a very long time to prove this kind of point. When I filed this case, I was like, I'll be surprised if this is resolved within Dunleavy's first term of office. So I fully expected it to take pretty much as long as it took. It's just part of being a litigant.
When you submitted that resignation letter, did you expect that they were going to accept it and that you were going to lose your job?
I was worried about losing my job, but I knew that what I was doing was legal. I knew my work was good. I knew my relationships with my clients and colleagues were good. My work was beyond reproach, right? And I knew I had the constitutional right to speak on these matters. And so my mistake was assuming that these folks were going to comply with the law, right? And I think I must have thought that because, you know, when they called me and told me about this, that I was fired, I was like, I picked up the phone and I said, are you calling to tell me you're firing me? And they're like, yeah, sorry, basically. So I kind of, you know, it wasn't like this huge shock, I guess, but I think deep down I was like, they couldn't really do this because this is against the law.
Now that it's been ruled that they fired you unconstitutionally, how do they pay for it?
So that's the question. And it's either going to be through a settlement or through a jury trial. And so this is kind of like the analogy would be the sentencing hearing, kind of like after someone's convicted, right? There's a whole other sentencing phase. It's kind of like that. It's a win. It's a pretty much an unqualified win, in my opinion, just because for me, just psychologically, this whole time, all I ever wanted was for a judge to say, yes, this was unconstitutional. Yes, this was illegal. And that finally happened. And so for me, it's over in my mind on that front, right? In terms of my feelings of vindication on the merits of what they did, how they're going to pay for it, what's going to happen in the future, how this will affect state employees. I mean, that's what I really care about is how that this never happened to another state employee ever again. I never want to see a mass resignation scheme. I never want to see some geologist, biologist, architect, you know, be forced to resign their job every 4 years. That's just insane.
Is this case like as simple as a free speech test? And should every state employee go out now and write whatever they want about the president on a personal blog and feel reasonably certain that they won't be fired?
I don't know. I definitely would hesitate to answer that question in the affirmative. I would hesitate to say yes to that. I don't think that's true. I think there is a fact-based analysis of like what positions are really policymaking positions for which political affiliation is actually a job requirement, right? Which aren't. You know, I think for some positions it's more clear than for others. I don't think the court's order really answers that question in any kind of uniform way. So I don't think, you know, the decision itself, I don't think it certainly doesn't say every non-unionized state employee can say whatever they want, whenever they want. Like, that's not what it says. But I think what it does do is it sends a message that, you know, at least in some cases, you know, non-unionized state employees do have free speech rights. It's not a good faith constitutional use of personnel resources to demand resignations and to make personnel decisions based strictly on people's off-duty speech. So it's not as cut and dried as now, you know, every non-unionized state employee, every partially exempt state employee can say and do whatever they want. No, that's not what this order says. But I think it does send a message that there are limits, you know, here to what the government can do to you. And we still have a democracy, in at least nominally, and we still have free speech rights in this country. And even if you work for the state, and that's been established now. So functionally, I think there will be much more deliberation at transition about who is told to leave their job and who is forced to resign their job and under what conditions, right? I think I will have set some precedent. These two cases will have set some precedent in that respect.
Libby, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.